Okay, hey everybody. Happy Wednesday. And both hands on the wheel, Ann. Stop! Thanks for joining. All right, so I want to start this with the song. Normally I don't do it on this hour, but Regina inspired me. I don't know if I normally do or not. Who knows? But Regina inspired me. So when she was talking about, you know, what if we didn't have access to any of our recordings or any of our old programs or any of that, what would we do? And so this is the song that I'm inspired to play. Let me do that. Okay.
And the Grinch put a hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to grow. This sound wasn't sad. What? This sound sounded glad. Every who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch with his Grinch feet, ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. Then, well, in Whoville, they say, that the Grinch's small heart grew three sizes that day. And then, the true meaning of Christmas came through, and the Grinch found the strength of 10 Grinches, plus two. And now that his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light. With a smile in his soul, he descended Mount Crumpet, cheerily blowing hoo-hoo on his trumpet. He rode into Whoville, he brought back their toys, he brought back their floof to the Who girls and boys. He brought back their snoof and their tringlers and fuzzles, brought back their pantookas, their dafflers and wuzzles. He brought everything back, all the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast. Welcome, Christmas. Bring your cheer. cheer to all who's far and near. Christmas Day is in our grasp, so long as we have hands to clasp. Christmas Day will always be just as long as we have we. Welcome Christmas while we stand, heart to heart and hand in hand.
Okay. I am pretty sure that's the same sentiment Regina was talking about, right? It's all here, not on the website, not coming out of any particular teacher's mouth. It's all right here. So thanks. That was fun. Thanks for joining me in that. That's twice this year I get to see that. Yeah. What we're really here for is to look at Locke Kelly's book, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. Let me get that. Give me 1 second. I want to get that off my screen. Oops, here it goes playing. So that's a good. Yeah. And keep it from stealing my bandwidth as well. Oh, man, I had another thing pulled up. It disappeared. Let me work on getting that pulled up. 1 sec, guys. I apologize. That's our background music when we get ready to do one of these glimpses. I want to be sure and have it pulled up. So, all right. So we are at page 37 of Locke Kelly's book. And this song's going to try and start playing in a second. So let me stop that. Okay. Oh, shoot. Two levels of mind. Locke says, one simple way to distinguish the two types of mindfulness is to say, let's talk about what we've been talking about. We've been talking about deliberate mindfulness, he says, which is usually what's taught as mindfulness in the West, where we are, and effortless mindfulness. We ended last week after we went through a nice long glimpse practice. And he talks about deliberate mindfulness as being, you know, like something, you know, just paying attention to all your thoughts, paying attention to, you know, what you're doing and that sort of thing. He says effortless mindfulness, this is what I've got starred, so I'm going to read this to you guys again. Effortless mindfulness does not mean that there is not an initial effort. We learn how to make an initial effort to shift out of our small mind to find an effortless awareness that is already here. He says it's also called effortless because mindfulness becomes spontaneously sustaining. And again, as far as contrast between the two goes, he says in deliberate mindfulness, we intentionally cultivate a loving attitude, calm our small mind, our small thinking mind, and then observe our thoughts and feelings. In effortless mindfulness, we shift out of our small mind thinking into the source of mind, which is already calm, focused, interconnected, and compassionate. And so that, I think that's, you know, the best distinction to make. Okay. Two levels of mind, page 37. He says, one simple way to distinguish the two types of mindfulness is to say that they are both being mindful, but from different levels of mind. This is important because what you can be mindful of depends on what level of mind you're mindful from. In effortless mindfulness, it is not as important to focus on what thoughts and emotions are arising, but rather to ask who or what level of mind are they arising to, right? And that should sound familiar, right? Who sees this thought? Regina tells us that all the time. Of course, I think she's getting it from Ramana Maharshi. But that's really the question. It's not, again, it's not, he says, it's not as important to focus on what thoughts and emotions are arising, but rather to ask who or what level of mind are they arising to? In effortless mindfulness, we shift from focusing on what we are aware of into focusing on awareness itself. Moving from a detached observer and into a view from interconnected awake awareness. You know, it just seems to me that... and I can't recall the teachers who I've heard talk about it, but that that detached observer view can, and maybe even Locke himself when we had that interview, but that detached observer view can itself become an obstacle, right? So the idea is to shift in that who sees this, awareness watching awareness. That's where we're at in our teachings here. That's what we've been looking at. He says, in deliberate mindfulness, we are aware from our mindful witness of things arising and passing. Effortless mindfulness invites us to be more intimately interconnected with our experience and all that is happening. This begins when we shift out of both our conceptual mind and our mindful witness and into awake awareness. Deliberate mindfulness focuses on the contents of consciousness, while effortless mindfulness turns back to be aware of the context, awareness itself. Which is, wow, really, it just struck me as being really powerful. It's like, you know, Connie was reading from Gina Lake's book last night in Gentle Healing Year One, In the World But Not Of It. And the metaphor was being used of the sky, right? The expansive sky, the space in which clouds occur, and everything else being like the clouds that appear in that sky. So in deliberate mindfulness, we'd be checking out those clouds, right? But in effortless mindfulness, we're really checking out the space in which the clouds appear, the space in which everything occurs. And I will also note in today's Gentle Healing Year One tip, you know, we're talking about, well, the tips start out, you are everything and everything is you. You know, you are, there's only one thing going on here, as I've often said. There's only one thing going on here. It's all made out of the same stuff. That spaciousness is what we are. And that's why we're interested in it, right? There's not spaciousness and then us. There's not spaciousness and then we appear in the spaciousness. No, we are that spaciousness. That's why we're turning back to look at it. So by looking at God, looking at spaciousness, looking at life, presence, awareness, we are looking at ourselves. This is what we are. In the Kabbalah, it talks about it in terms of God being a process. And I can't think of the rabbi's name, but he talked about, you know, Jacqueline-ing, dawning, Shauna-ing, and Susan-ing, right? I mean, this is the whole point. It's not a solid object. It is life occurring all the time. It's this spaciousness. And this is what we're looking at. Let me just double check and make sure I don't need to pay attention to this text that came in. That's weird. That was Dawn texting Regina. I think you got me on that text too, Dawn. It's all good. I'm like, what's the title of my program? I don't know. It's not over yet. What do you think it ought to be? Blue sky. What was that? All right, so let's look at what Locke says. He says, deliberate mindfulness, and again, he's doing the contrast. Deliberate mindfulness focuses on the contents of consciousness, while effortless mindfulness turns back to be aware of the context, awareness itself, God itself, us, ourselves, ourself, right? Life, awareness, present. With deliberate mindfulness, we discover who we are not. With effortless mindfulness, we discover who we essentially are. And, you know, again, that's that 1-2 process that we've been talking about, at least in General Healing Year 1, right? We look at the thoughts and we see that we are not those thoughts. And then we turn to what we really are. This is the same 1-2 thing that we're talking about there. Also, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about somebody's like, "What? When will I know when to quit doing root cause inquiry?" And I pointed out that you know, it's not that clearly delineated. You might not do, you know, you might do a bunch of root cause inquiry when you first figure out what root cause inquiry is and go look and, you know, you want to look and see why this thought keeps coming back. But after a while, you're able to just look at the thought and go, "No, thank you. I know what you're made of. Thank you very much." Some upsets may be upsetting enough, you know, big enough, or maybe recurrent enough that you will in fact want to do root cause inquiry on them. But I think there's a point where in time where the necessity to get to the bottom of every single thought fades. Right. Our focus is on discovering who we essentially are. And that's what Locke is saying here. With effortless mindfulness, we discover who we essentially are. He says effortless mindfulness does not lead to being detached from emotions, but rather to both feeling more vulnerable and to having more capacity to be tender and welcoming of all feelings. And that should sound familiar. We were just hearing Brene Brown talk about that in the Something Genuine program when we listened to her TED Talk on vulnerability. You know, the vulnerability is the willingness to be authentic. And you become willing to be authentic when you're no longer trying to cover up for your "I am bad" belief, right? And she said, with this willingness, this courage to be vulnerable, comes compassion. And these are the two things. these are exactly the two things he's talking about here. He says, effortless mindfulness does not lead to being detached from emotions, but rather to both feeling more vulnerable and to having more capacity to be tender and welcoming of all feelings. The radical reports from my students are that our essential nature is loving, joyous, and free of worry. And we just need to untie the knots of conditioning to reveal these natural qualities. It's what we learn in, in NTI? Shauna, we looked at that if you don't remember, that's fine. In the Freedom from the Judge retreat. I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember what particular, but it, you know, NTI said is like every other truth book. It says the same thing over and over and over again. Look at NTI, you'll find it. and certainly this is what A Course in Miracles teaches. You know, it's not about teaching you the meaning of love. That's beyond what can be taught. It's about removing the awareness, the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, which is what you are, right? So when you remove these obstacles, what you are in NTI language filters up from the bottom of the empty shell. Or in A Course in Miracles words, when you remove the obstacles, love naturally arises. You get love's presence. You're like, oh, it was there all the time. So again, he says effortless mindfulness, which he just told us is what we use to discover who we essentially are. Effortless mindfulness does not lead to being detached from emotions, but rather to both feeling more vulnerable and to having more capacity to be tender and welcoming of all feelings. The radical reports for my students are that our essential nature is loving, joyous, and free of worry, and we just need to untie the knots of conditioning to reveal these natural qualities. He says, one student who came to a day-long retreat was a dance and yoga teacher, originally trained in Russia as a ballerina. She said she had never before done a practice like effortless mindfulness. Near the end of the day, after doing a variety of effortless mindfulness glimpses, she said, I am crying with joy because, for the first time in my life, I am able to intentionally feel fully embodied. This feeling of being aware of my body from within and from everywhere only happens once in a while. Embodiment is not just being in my body, but feeling connected to everything and everybody. It is what I love most about yoga and dance, and I chase it, but I never knew how to access it directly until now. Okay. Awesome. Okay, I'm on page 38 if you're following along. The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. Leaving the Witness Protection Program, he calls this section. He says, in deliberate mindfulness, after an initial stage of calming our chattering mind, we establish a mindful witness to observe thoughts, feelings, and sensations. Insight meditation can lead to an important insight that I am not my thoughts, beliefs, stories, or a thought-based identity. This is what I call, Locke calls the mindful move. The mindful move helps us get a healthy distance from being identified with emotions and thoughts. And again, as far as I'm concerned, it's because it's from my personal experience, as far as I'm concerned, as far as Michael Singer's concerned, he has said the same thing. Getting that distance from your thoughts and emotions is the most important step on the spiritual path. We talked about it last night in general healing, that's when critical mass is reached. When you can get that distance, then you're able to step back and say, oh, I don't have to participate in those thoughts and those feelings and those emotions anymore. As long as you think they're your thoughts and your emotions, you know, it's going to feel like you're trapped there. It's going to be like a spider web, you know? So really having the direct experience of those not being your thoughts and those not being your emotions is critical. And he's telling us that's how we can use this effortless mindfulness approach that he's teaching us. Again, he says insight meditation, which in a moment he'll call the mindful move. He says insight meditation can lead to an important insight that I am not my thoughts, beliefs, stories, or thought-based identity. This is what I call the mindful move. The mindful moves helps us get a healthy distance from being identified with emotions and thoughts. For example, we may feel misunderstood by a family member and respond with defensive anger, only to realize that we misunderstood what they said. The mindful move can allow just enough space to ask a question that can bring clarity to you and the relationship. We see that there is not a solid mind and not a solid separate self made of thoughts by observing thoughts like, I am thinking this thought. This helps us take thoughts less personally. He says, many people seek mindfulness training because of suffering caused by being too attached. Some people who come to my workshops for the first time say they are too identified with their thoughts and feelings. And this is in quotes. I wake up every morning immediately worried about work, then get involved in dramas, which causes more stress. Or, another quote, I feel like I'm hypersensitive to other people's moods and take on their feelings. He says, we make the mindful move to a detached witness with deliberate mindfulness. Establishing this mindful witness brings relief from being over-identified, which is an important step. However, the danger of stopping at this level of a detached witness is that we may end up isolated, as if in a witness protection program. One student said, I was good at being mindful of activities from my bird's eye view, but I began to feel I lost my flow and became more aloof, mental, and robotic, like Spock from Star Trek. again, just on this theme, this idea of being separate from our thoughts. It's funny because that could have been me he quoted, where he said, I wake up every morning immediately worried about work, then get involved in dramas, which causes more stress. That was my entry into really direct experience, not just conceptually, but direct experience of I am not my thoughts. I woke up one morning at one of those enlightenment retreats and saw the scan of first my body, then my environment, then saw it want to go to potential problems of the day, what the potential problems of the day could be. But I was just sitting there watching it happen. It's like, whoa, watching this other thing, this other mechanism in here, inside my head, seemingly do that scan in the morning. And then realizing that this scan is something that occurred every day of my life. But it's sure not who I am. You know, if it was who I am, I couldn't watch it, could I? So I think he's right on here. Sean asked a question. Oh, okay. Sean said, could you give an example of how the observer role can become an obstacle? Okay, good. And Don is right. We're getting ready to answer that question in Locke's book. So, again, one student said, I was good at being mindful of activities from my bird's eye view, but I began to feel I lost my flow and became more aloof, mental, and robotic, like Spock from Star Trek. Locke says, here, there's still a subtle dualism of observer and observed that gives us a feeling of freedom from attachment while maintaining a feeling of looking down from a distant tower at our body, mind, and the world. Locke says the unique thing about effortless mindfulness is that the first shift is to look back through the meditator to even further disidentification as we open to vast, timeless, non-conceptual, awake awareness. The unfolding of effortless mindfulness continues to become aware simultaneously from outside and within. So we feel a natural interconnection and intimacy with everything without being re-identified. So let's just talk about this a minute again from both the perspective of Shauna's question, Don's answer, and maybe a little bit of personal experience here. Shauna asked, could you give an example of how the observer role can become an obstacle? And both Don and Locke addressed that. Don said too much distance, which is essentially what Locke said. But there's, my experience is that in that space, like, you know, we talk about dropping from the head to the heart, and you all have done it too. I've seen you do it. You've done it here in this this program with me. When you drop from your head to your heart, you feel that interconnectedness. You know, he's told us, you know, look out from your awareness of your eyes. Now close your eyes. And we've each one of us reported, oh, it's a softer place, right? The edges on things seem to blur, right? It's not all stark, you know. You get a sense of intimacy with everything when you're in your heart. So even though, and frankly, when I was reading this book quickly for my interview with Locke, you know, I highlighted sections, and I had highlighted the section and put a question mark by it. So let me read this again. The unique thing about effortless mindfulness is that the first shift is to look back through the meditator to even further disidentification as we open to vast, timeless, non-conceptual, awake awareness. So that's the first thing, right? This is talking about dropping from our heads to our hearts. And every time we would do one of these glimpses, we do this. Then he says, the unfolding of effortless mindfulness continues to become aware simultaneously from outside and within. So we feel a natural interconnection and intimacy with everything without being re-identified, which is exactly what we've all experienced, that softness that comes. You know, in a larger sense, I talked the other night when Jay and I did that interview about that mystical experience where I got where it became apparent that everything was one. Oh, everything was one. You know, it was so funny because it's actually going through this very process of getting it intellectually. Oh, okay, everything's one. Thank you. And then it just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and just, you know, I'm trying to think of the programs where they do it, where they show it. I'm thinking The Matrix and also What the Bleep. You know, where we go down to microscopic levels and you start to see how, you know, everything is atoms and there's no line, you know, there's no lines around this body where the atoms start, right? I mean, I'm all atoms and space, and this desk is all atoms and space, and everything's just, I mean, there's no separation between those things. There is no actual separation between me and this desk. Me and this computer. All right. I will go on. On page 39, Locke says, he's got a new section called The Effortless Mindfulness Research. He says, deliberate mindfulness has two main styles of practice. Shamatha, translated as calm abiding, and Vipassana, translated as insight meditation. First, there's a calming and focusing of the small mind in calm abiding. Next are insight meditation practices like the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which I'll explain in the next chapter, where we establish a mindful monitor to witness the contents of consciousness. He says it's now accepted in the field of mindfulness research to refer to calm abiding as focused attention and the insight meditation practice as open monitoring. Recently, a third type of mindfulness, non-dual awareness, has been included in mindfulness research studies. He says the term non-dual is one of the best ways to describe effortless mindfulness. The Sanskrit word for non-duality is Advaita, which means not two. It is pointing to the view that the dualistic way of perceiving, inside versus outside, subject versus object, and other versus self, is not the only level of reality. In Buddhism, non-dual is defined as two truths. meaning that ultimate reality as formless, awake awareness and everyday relative reality are experienced simultaneously. I'm going to read that sentence again. In Buddhism, non-dual is defined as two truths, meaning that ultimate reality as formless, awake awareness and everyday relative reality are experienced simultaneously. Some people define non-duality as oneness or pure awake awareness because it is beyond dualistic thought. Here, non-duality means that the dualistic relative reality we experience of separate energies and things is made of awake awareness. This is what we said a while ago. So awake awareness and appearances are not essentially two different things. There's only one thing going on here. It's all made out of the same stuff. Non-duality begins with a recognition of a transcendent dimension of reality, awake awareness, and then sees this as the foundation of our everyday dimension of reality. And again, it's the same thing that's in today's General Healing Year One tip. Same thing, exact same thing we're talking about. George came by for a hug. I'm going to read that again. Non-duality begins with a recognition of a transcendent dimension of reality, awake awareness, which we often call life presence awareness, life awareness presence, awake awareness. Non-duality begins with a recognition of a transcendent dimension of reality, awake awareness, and then sees this as the foundation of our everyday dimension of reality. So when we shift into non-dual awareness, we experience objects both as interconnected and as a unique expression simultaneously. Non-dual awareness is another way of describing the view from effortless mindfulness. He says, here are three descriptions that might be helpful to understand the difference in these three stages of mindfulness. Focused attention is like looking down from a tower to the river of your breath. Open monitoring is like looking from an open sky to thoughts, feelings, and sensations as separate objects, like clouds and birds coming and going. Non-dual awareness is like being the entire ocean of awareness that is also arising as the unique wave of your body, while feeling an interconnected flow with everything. For this reason, I often call effortless mindfulness non-dual mindfulness. Locke says, in one research study conducted in 2012 at New York University by Zoran Josipovic, PhD, and his research team, experienced practitioners of effortless mindfulness were asked to shift into non-dual awareness while receiving a functional magnetic resonance imaging scan, an fMRI scan. He says, I'm familiar with these important results because I was one of the subjects in this study. We were asked to do focused attention practices, open monitoring practices, and then non-dual awareness practices. The results showed dramatic differences in the brain between the different practices, as I will explain below. The non-dual awareness practices I did while in the fMRI machine were the effortless mindfulness practices that I present in this book. He says the study looked at our brain's two primary networks, the externally focused task positive mode and the internally focused default mode. During goal-oriented activity, the default mode network is deactivated and the task positive network is activated. When we are daydreaming, creatively imagining, or thinking about a situation, our internal network is activated and our external network is deactivated. He says, our brain continuously and rhythmically alternates between these two networks, which leads to a feeling of distraction. And somebody in one of those TED Talks told us that the other night, that we refocus attention every however many seconds, right? That you can't actually maintain focused attention. Again, he says, our brain continuously and rhythmically alternates between these two networks, which leads to a feeling of distraction. We can notice this when, for instance, we are standing in line and realize our attention goes outward to what's going on in the room, and then shifts to become aware of something we're thinking about. We are not intentionally doing this. Our brain is alternating, and our attention follows. He says, one insight from Josipovic's study was that one-pointed focused attention tends toward suppression of the activity of the default network. Focused attention and open monitoring each suppress one of the two brain modes. You know, if you're doing one, you're not doing the other. You know, if you're just being open and watching things come and go, right, then you're not task-oriented. He says, while suppressing one mode gives us relief, we cannot function for long from just one mode. If we are only focused on monitoring our inner world, we cannot complete daily tasks. If we're only mindful of outer tasks, we can become unaware of our inner life and lose the creativity that comes from free association and creative thinking. Josipovic writes that non-dual meditation is different from focused attention and open monitoring meditations in that it enables an atypical state, the not typical state, okay? So this is why effortless mindfulness is good. Why these glimpses are good is what he's trying to tell us. It's different in that it enables an atypical state, a not typical state of mind in which extrinsic and intrinsic experiences are increasingly synergistic rather than competing. Everybody gets along now, right? It's not like you can only do this or you can only do that. He says, effortless mindfulness balances the activity of the default mode and the task positive network so that we are equally aware of what we're doing and our internal state. Awake awareness is aware of what happens both inside and outside. All right, and that goes back to that passage I had the question mark about, right? He says, the unfolding of effortless mindfulness continues to become aware simultaneously from outside and within. So we feel a natural interconnection and intimacy with everything without being re-identified. So again, so this type of meditation enables an atypical state of mind in which extrinsic and intrinsic experiences are increasingly synergistic rather than competing. Effortless mindfulness balances the activity of the default mode network and task positive network so that we are equally aware of what we're doing and our internal state. Awake awareness is aware of what happens both inside and outside. He says, we don't want to completely shut down the default mode network because it has positive aspects, including giving us the ability to imagine, free associate, and think creatively. These advanced creative abilities distinguish us from other creatures as they enable us to imagine future outcomes and plan for them, an evolutionary advantage that we would lose if we were to repress this creative network, the default mode network, entirely to make ourselves calm. I said that backwards. It's the task positive he's talking about. We don't want to shut down that part of the brain completely. You know, and again, the other night I talked about my experience, and I was so deeply in that experience, laying there in the pool, having that mystic experience, I couldn't figure out how to make my body work. So, I mean, yeah, that's what he's saying. He's like, don't worry, we're not going to take you this far. You're able to do both, he says. He says, the study concluded that focused attention practices such as one-pointed meditation create calm by keeping the one mode of the task positive network on and suppressing the internal default mode network. Non-dual awareness meditation in contrast, was shown to balance external and internal networks. He says, for me, as a subject, non-dual awareness or effortless mindfulness is the experience of being undistracted without effort, aware of what's going on inside and outside as a continuous, interconnected, seamless flow. So tell you what, we've got 10 minutes left, and I don't want to leave you without a glimpse, so I'm going to go back and find one. Okay. So let me start my music, and then we'll do the glimpse. Okay. This is relaxing the problem solver. With open or closed eyes, ask yourself, what is here now when there is no problem to solve? What is here now when there's no problem to solve? Let your awareness unhook from the problem solver. Draw, open, feel within and all around. Who is here? What is aware? What is here when there's nowhere to go, nothing to do? Nothing to know, create, or become? What is here just now when you are not the problem solver? Who is here? What is aware? Thank you. Now ask yourself, what's aware now when there is no problem to solve? Feel the qualities that arise. What's absent that was here a few minutes ago? What natural qualities are here now? Where are you aware from? Where are you aware from? What is this feeling of being? Fresh inner's mind, choir. What's here now when there's no problem to solve? Okay, now I ask you to open your eyes, and we have just a couple minutes before we will end today, but I'd like to hear from you about your experience, if you feel to share.
You know, I came on late, Jacqueline. You know, again, I have this compassionate tears because I know what I am. You know, and the clarity that you give through this teaching is incredible for me because it's a direct experience. So thank you. Now, just because I know what I am doesn't mean that I don't believe, doesn't mean that my ego doesn't still distract me. Got to clarify that. The ego hasn't died yet. Is it going to?
there's hope.
But I love listening to you. I just, you know, I was away, so yeah, but it's just amazing the compassion that comes forth when you're in the space, and the music to go with it is just incredible.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Thank you for sharing Sharon. Thank you for sharing, Sharon. And I see, by the way, that Dawn says that Dawn, that stuff wasn't coming up on my chat. She was saying she could barely hear me, so I'll do better next time. I'll pull that microphone closer next time. But I don't know why the chat doesn't come through when I'm sharing the screen. Who else would like to share? We've got just another minute. Shauna, please.
That was fabulous. Again, my mind was kind of full of problems and stuff to deal with later in the day. And I just let that go. And as I did, I was able to go straight into my heart and relax into my heart. And I really enjoy this program too. And I thought that the music's perfect in the background. So thank you.
Good. But I could have been a little bit closer, I think, to the mic.
Could have been. Yeah.
I'll do that next time. I forgot.
Cool. don't focus on what needs to be different. You can do what you want, but I want you to hear that it's beautiful and that it's really coming through. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Lovely. That's sweet, Shauna. You're so sweet. Thank you for sharing that. I would keep on going, but Dawn wouldn't have it because I think it's her. Is it your break time, Dawn? Fair enough. All right. I love you guys, and I'll see you next time.